Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, if you're a football fan and you're missing your fix of football like I am, I mean, for God's sake, the last 16 of Europe, it's not happening. Anyway, the only thing we can do is to take to TV and film for some solace. And Julian Fellowes is helping us out there because he's the creator of Downton Abbey. And he launched his new six-part mini-series, The English Game, on Netflix last weekend. In case you hadn't heard, the series, which features Irish actors Niamh Walsh and Sam Keighley, charts the origins of football in the 19th century in England. It looks set to bring melodrama and romance to the story of how football became the definitive British sport. It isn't the first football-themed production we've seen on our screens. You can see where I'm going with this. Let's take a look at how the beautiful game has been treated in cinema and television. And I want to talk to Chris Wasser about all of this. Chris, welcome to the programme. The English Game, just give us a little bit on that, first of all.
Yeah, I've been watching the first couple of episodes, Dave, and I haven't been all that impressed. I mean, it's sort of like a lot of the other stuff that Julian Fellowes has done. He's more interested in melodrama, as you said, and he's more interested in, you know, romantic subplots and a sort of a soap opera theme, and the real life, you know, the fascinating elements behind how, you know, the FA was established and changed, and how football in 1879 went from a game that only, you know, posh people and toffs and gentlemen played to, you know, the common man sport, as it were. That just seems to be all kind of, it seems to be just passing us by. So there's not much depth to it. The football scenes, like every other, you know, some of the titles we'll be looking at here, the scenes where, you know, the actors are playing football, it's all very tightly shot. Maybe to cover up the fact, I mean, there is one way of looking at that, you know, the game wasn't quite as skillful back then as it is today, but also because it's kind of hard to film actors playing football because maybe they're not the greatest players. So, you know, it's a bit stagey. It's reasonably well performed, but, you know, you kind of come away from it asking more questions about how football was actually became the game that we know and love today than you had going in. And in my books, that's never really a good thing. I'm not sure, but have you watched it yourself?
No, I haven't seen it, but I'll tell you what, I'm just going to give you 15 seconds of it right now. Here goes.
It started with a game.
The game.
A gentleman's sport.
Football. The people's game.
Some northern mill workers versus
a bunch of southern toffs.
Two teams, two worlds apart.
Led out by two captains.
Sure, I'll give it a blast and we'll see about it next time around. Okay, we're talking to Chris Wasser. We're going to look at some other ones because from historical period dramas to iconic British comedies, football, it's been at the heart of some pretty memorable films and TV shows, and none were perhaps quite as popular as the first one on your list, which is the one with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers and Keira Knightley in it. Tell us about it, Chris.
Yeah, Bend It Like Beckham, which is maybe a lot better than you might recall. I know a lot of people liked it at the time, but it has aged reasonably well. And as you said at the top there, if you do look hard enough, you'll find that there are football films for almost every genre. I mean, war features have had their own football films, romantic comedies like Bend It Like Beckham, thrillers, dramas. And Bend It Like Beckham actually covered an awful lot of ground. It was released 18 years ago. It tells the story of a girl named Jess, played by Perminder Nagra. She's 18 years of age. She lives in London. And it's her dream to become a professional footballer. Now, she's the daughter of Punjabi Sikhs, and her parents, they won't allow her to play. And they believe that, you know, football is a man's sport. You should concentrate in your studies. And that's the end of that. So it's the usual formulaic sports drama setup. The parents aren't happy with the son or daughter playing, you know, this silly sport. They wanted to get a real job. But you also have, you know, a subplot, or not even a subplot. There's an awful lot going on underneath about challenging dated social norms, trying to find balance between two contrasting cultures. It's exploring very serious social issues. You know, the fact that Jess wants to be independent, she wants to adapt to a modern society, and that just so happens to make room for a football theme. So you've got Keira Knightley in there as the young girl's new friend. You've got a very handsome Jonathan Rhys-Meyers as the problematic football coach who may get it. You know, who may get in the way of them. It is quite effective. It made a lot of money at the box office. Do you remember liking it at the time?
I do, kind of, but I also remember saying a bit of a damn clever title. It really makes people kind of want to see the movie, you know, because there's some movies with titles that just make you not want to see them and it doesn't work. I'm going to give you a blast of it here. And by the way, you did say that, like, you know, it stands up nearly 20 years later. I'm pretty sure you're going to be saying some of the other ones should be left where they were, but I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, I'll give you a blast. Bend It Like Beckham.
Didn't ask to be good at football. Guru Nanak must have blessed me. Anyway, there was a scout from America there today, and he's offered me a place at a top university. with a free scholarship and a chance to play football professionally. And I really want to go.
You let her leave her sister's wedding to go to a football match.
I didn't have the heart to stop her.
And that's why she's ready to go all the way to America now.
Sister's wedding to go to a football match. I could understand that. Anyway, you were in here last year, Chris, to talk about boxing movies. And, you know, every good boxing flick follows a kind of a certain set of familiar rules and themes and narrative arcs. Is it the same with the football movies?
Sort of the same. Unfortunately, there's a problem, which is that I think, I said it earlier about the English game, if you look at some of the scenes in this new series by Julian Fellowes, you'll notice that everything is very tightly shot and that you can't really see what the players are at. Yeah. Now, football used to be a game that, you know, didn't have nearly as many rules as it does nowadays, and it kind of resembled rugby in some ways. It was quite rough. But it's very, in terms of boxing films, you can teach an actor over six months, maybe, you can train them to look the part, to, you know, basically cover all the basics of boxing. And, you know, if they're a good enough actor, they can convince audiences that they are a champion of the world. But I think you can actually spot a bad, bad movie footballer a mile off.
Yeah,
it's that little bit harder to do because you're trying to train 11 actors. So maybe that's part of the reason why, you know, well, other than the fact that there haven't been great stories, there haven't been great filmmakers who've approached the genre, there haven't really been that many classic football films.
Well, what about a movie like When Saturday Comes, for instance?
I think When Saturday Comes, that's a good one because it released back in the mid-90s. Like some of the best, I know I said there's no real classic football dramas, but there are good ones. Some of the best ones have taken, they kind of shine a light on things that are happening. You know, if you shift your attention to what's happening behind the scenes or on the sideline, as it were, you have much more a chance of leaving American audiences. So When Saturday Comes, Sean Bean, Emily Lloyd, it's about a guy who finally gets his chance to become a professional footballer, because all of these films, Dave, are all about people fulfilling their lifelong dreams. But he's a factory worker, and it's all about a guy who's never had a break. And it's really a film about working class life in Britain. And it's the same with the likes of Mean Machine, which was...
Oh, that was Vinnie Jones, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're probably like myself. Do you remember when Vinnie Jones said that he was retiring from Wimbledon and he was going to become an actor, and we all laughed?
No, I don't. But I vaguely remember when he went into movies, all right, yeah.
Yeah, and he's gone on to make something like 50 or 60 films, and he's been in some very successful ones. Mean Machine was a remake of an American film about American football, and it's about a retired footballer who ends up in prison. He then, you know, tries to turn things around. He trains a team of inmates to take on the prison guards in a friendly match. It's more of a redemption story.
Wow, it sounds just like Ronaldinho at the moment.
Yeah. It's more of a redemption story. So I think these things are a lot better when they kind of get off the pitch.
Okay, let's go over something different. The Damned United. Tell me about that.
Well, this is a film, as I said, this is a classic manager film. And yeah. I think manager films are better because you're focusing on one person. You've got Tom Hooper in here, who last year, you know, gave his cats. But, you know, look, he's done some good stuff. This is one of them. You've got the Queen writer and the Crown writer, Peter Morgan.
Yeah.
Coming together to adapt the David Peace novel, The Damned United.
So Michael Sheen is playing Brian Clough.
Brian Clough, yeah. So it's a fictionalized account of Brian Clough's stint at Leeds United in the mid-1970s. If you're a Leeds fan, you'll know that he was there at the club for just 44 days, and it was quite disastrous. So you've got this blending of a fascinating true story of a manager trying to turn a club around that also takes a lot of artistic liberties. Now, Michael Sheen, he's a chameleon. He just falls into the role here, and he is brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is a very effective film, but... It does make up some things as it goes along, doesn't
okay,
it?
Okay, I'll give you a blast here. The Damned United.
You lot may all be internationals and have won all the domestic honours there are to win under Don Revy. But as far as I'm concerned, the first thing you can do for me is to chuck all your medals and all your caps and all your pots and all your pans into the biggest flipping dustbin you can find, because you've never won any of them fairly. You've done it all by blooming cheating.
We should have got Johnny Giles to review the movie. Or Norman, bite your legs, Hunter. Okay, let's go over something else here, because football films, notoriously difficult to market to US audiences, as kind of, could I say, Will Ferrell discovered that some years back?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you're a huge fan of Will Ferrell's sports comedies, would I be right?
No.
I mean, I'm not sure if we can blame audiences on this, but Will Ferrell, you'll remember, there was probably about 6 or 7 years there where Will Ferrell was just fixated on sports comedies. So we had, Blades of Glory, ice skating. We had Talladega Nights, race car driving.
And both of those I got a bit of a laugh out of, actually.
Absolutely. Blades of Glory is genuinely funny, but Kicking and Screaming, not so much.
I don't think I ever saw it. What's that about?
It's about a father and son who coach rival Little League soccer teams. You have to say soccer in this case. It's Will Ferrell, Robert Duvall. Robert Duvall is obviously the dad. They go to war with their football teams. One of them's the best team in town. The other one's the worst team in town. It's really a story about a middle-aged man trying to mend his relationship with his dad, who he's afraid of. And it's got, it's the usual Will Ferrell comedy. It's noisy. Yeah.
Didn't Gerard Butler, the famous, brilliant, greatest actor ever from Scotland, didn't he have a couple of football movies, neither of which I saw, by the way?
He did, yeah. I mean, the thing about Gerard Butler is I think the greatest thing he ever did was convince people that he could act. I think he's made some sort of pact with the devil because Gerard Butler is a terrible actor, but he is also this enigma that has somehow managed to make millions at the box office. His films are always quite successful.
Yeah.
And yet still, he made two football-themed films. One was a real-life drama called The Game of Their Lives. The other, a few years later, was a romantic comedy called Playing for Keeps, where he played a former Celtic player turned sports broadcaster in America. And they both tanked at the box office. So that's two Gerard Butler films about football that don't make any money, but then he goes off and makes an action movie and it does make money.
Listen, he saved the White House, for crying out loud. Don't be
giving it to him. He saved the White House three times.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's great. You do have some FIFA-supported movies on your list. Talk to us about, if you like, the Goal Trilogy.
Do you remember these?
Not really, no.
Really? Okay. They're not that long ago. The first Goal film, and that's what they're called. These films are just called Goal. Or the first one was Goal, The Dream Begins. Yeah. Because, as I said, they're all about dreams. Released in 2005, it was the story of a young fellow named Santiago Muniz.
And all the biggest names were in it, weren't they? All the biggest footballers, I mean.
Yeah, it was a guy from LA who wanted to become a footballer, and he gets a trial at Newcastle. Of all the places in the world, he goes to Newcastle. And Newcastle get into the Champions League. Santiago starts coming up against the likes of Beckham, Zidane, Ronaldo, Messi. The reason all these players were allowed and could actually star in the film is because FIFA assisted in the production of this film.
Right.
It was also made in cooperation with Adidas. So there was a hell of a lot of money being pumped into this film. And this is a weird thing. I've been looking into the box office takings because there were three of these things.
Really? I vaguely remember that there was a sequel. There were three of them.
There were three of them, yeah. That's the thing. I can barely remember watching the first. I actually saw the first one on television. I didn't go to a cinema to see it. But there were three of them. Each film made less money at the box office than the one before it. If you combine the box office takings for these three films, it's barely $35 million. So they're glorified ads for FIFA, and I just think it might be the only film franchise that just lost money with every new
film. Well, glorified ads for FIFA. Well, then tell me about United Passions, which I vaguely heard of, but I certainly haven't seen it. What is it?
Yeah, very few people have seen this film. I mean, it made 150 grand, so that'll tell you how few. It's one of the worst films of all time. I enjoyed it so much, Dave. It's the story of how FIFA came to exist, basically. And it's a film funded by FIFA and made by FIFA.
What is it? Is it a drama?
It's a drama, and it's all about how FIFA was established. So Tim Roth, Sam Neill, Gerard Depardieu, they're all in this thing. You've got Tim Roth playing Sepp Blatter. It's about this. It's about how the Federation Football Association was founded, and it was released in 2015. This drama just about how they got up and running. Why you would release a film about FIFA and in the same summer that the FIFA corruption case kicked off?
Don't tell me. Special guest star Sepp Blatter. No.
Oh, just it's such bad timing. But the film is atrocious because it is made by FIFA, and it was quite, it actually cost a fortune to make, and it does star real actors. It doesn't mention anything about corruption. It's not a true story.
All right, so it didn't work. Let's talk about football on the small screen. What's dream? Here, I'll give you a blast. Look, I'm going to give you a dream theme. You can tell us about it. Okay, that is the dream team theme. Did I get that right? I did, yeah. What is it?
Well, that for a start, Dave, that's going to be stuck in our heads all day now. Dream Team was a Sky One soap. It was a soap about a fictional British football club. It ran for 10 years between 97 and 2007. It was about a club called Harchester United, who go from, you know, facing relegation in the first division to winning the FA Cup, which is all anyone in the club wants. And it's about how these new club owners come in that are maybe a bit dodgy. Jerry and Linda Block, Alison King from Coronation Street played Linda Block. It's about how they somehow acquire money to sign these star players that just turn the club around. And that's pretty much it. Now, I don't know if you remember much about this series.
You know, it's gone so over my head. I've never even heard of it.
Are you serious? Have you ever heard that theme tune before?
No, but you say I will by the end of the day. I'll know it off by heart. No, I don't know it at all.
Dave, the weirdest thing about this show was that it was a soap. And when I was in school at Sing Street, everyone's parents and grandparents watched Emmerdale, Coronation Street, EastEnders. All the kids in Sing Street, myself and my mates, were watching Dream Team. And some of my mates even had the fictional jerseys because you could buy them. It was so weird because even at the time, we were just all hooked on this drama about a fictional football club. But even at the time, I kind of knew that the storylines were ridiculous. I mean, more people in Dream Team got killed off every week than in the likes of Game of Thrones. I mean, this poor club somehow managed to overcome bus crashes, plane crashes, snipers taking out players at Wembley Stadium. It was just mental. But I should add as well, the one good thing that it had going for it was this use of rotoscoping technology, where it was made in cooperation with Sky Sports. And what they do is they'd essentially trace the fictional Harchester club players over real players from real matches to create the football sequences.
Oh, of course, right, yeah. They would do that, wouldn't they? Okay, let's go towards the end for just have a quick look. I mean, I can't believe you got this far and you didn't mention Escape to Victory.
Escape to Victory is are you a fan of this? Yes or no?
I remember it. I saw it. It was a bit. I kind of found it a bit of a laugh. Michael Caine, wasn't it?
Michael
Sylvester.
Caine, yeah. And Sylvester Stallone as a goalie, you know, where else are you going to get it? It was made in 1981. It's a World War II drama. It's a story of how Allied prisoners of war in a German prison camp, they take on, the Germans as part of this, like, propaganda stunt.
Yeah, it was kind of like the Ipswich soccer team, really, wasn't it?
The Ipswich soccer team came on board to train the lads because they were one of the best teams in Europe at that time. So you had Gordon Banks, you had Pele, you had Bobby Moore. They were all helping out these actors.
Yeah, Gordon Banks was coaching Sylvester as the goalie or something, wasn't he?
You had Michael Caine. You had the recently deceased Max von Sydow in there as well.
Oh, yeah, he died last week, or the other week,
And that's pretty much it. But of course, it's about the Allied players are staging a sort of a great escape in the background to happen.
Well, look, I'm going to give you a blast of that in a second. But just before I do, finally, just a couple of documentary things, which is probably really where it's all at when it comes So what are we talking about?
We're talking about if you can track it down, Zidane, a 21st Century Portrait, which is essentially a 90-minute film where you're watching Zidane playing for Real Madrid in 2005.
Someday, Chris, I'll tell you the full story of that. My friend did that movie, Des Whelan from Dublin. He was the cameraman on that. Well, one of the, he was like in charge of about 10 of the cameras of 17.
Oh, brilliant.
Bizarre stories, I can tell you. Okay, that's Zidane, which is called Zidane, a 21st Century Portrait. What else is it? What's Football as Never Before?
Football as Never Before is essentially the same as the Zidane film, obviously made before, because it's 90 minutes of George Best at United, The cameras are just on him against Coventry City. A couple more, you've got Next Goal Wins, which is the story of how the national football team of American Samoa went from becoming one of the worst teams in the world to, you know, going above and beyond to try and qualify for the World Cup 6 years ago.
Yeah.
The reason I mention that is because Taika Waititi, who recently won an Oscar for Jojo Rabbit, he's actually turning that into a drama now with Michael Fassbender.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that. And finally, I believe this was on telly last week. If you can try and track it.
I bet you I know the Maradona one. I haven't seen it.
Ah, Dave, it's brilliant.
Yeah, so I hear, yeah.
I mean, it's the story of how Diego Maradona went from zero to hero to zero again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I won't go too much into it. I'll just say that I've never had so much sympathy or empathy for that man as I did after watching this film.
It's made you were going to say he didn't have so much sympathy or empathy for people around him. Oh, I must watch it.
No. He was so badly treated there at one stage in his career that you kind of do think, oh, God, like, I'm actually on his side for a change, because I used to think very differently about him. But it's made by the same guy who, Asaf Kapadia, who made Amy and Senna.
Senna was great, too. I did see that. Listen, look, that's brilliant. Chris, thank you so much for talking to us on the programme today. Chris Wasser it is, and I'm going to give you 20 seconds to go right back for an escape to victory.
In 1942, the Nazis thought they were sitting on top of the world, never suspecting that they could be toppled in one conflict, the most unusual battle of the war.
It has been decided that a German national team will play a combined team from the prisoners of war of the occupied territories.
That's crazy. They couldn't run about for 90 minutes. They'd be chucking their guts up.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.